Hello, everyone. Welcome to the fourth jury break of season two, the trial of Keith Montgomery. This episode follows a trial installment in which Keith's history with pickup artistry was explored. Before we get to our interview, and it's a good one, I have a few words about our current season. I had no idea what I was undertaking when I decided to make this season a sensitive crimes trial. I didn't realize how comfortable murder was, comparatively. I thought that against the backdrop of our national conversation, this content would be timely and relevant and interesting. And for those who think it is, thank you. I'm also aware there are many people who are finding this season difficult, and people who are growing angry not only at the trial, but at the interviews I'm conducting. For those who are angry, I'm sorry. I'm really doing my best to facilitate conversations that express both sides. I'm going to fall short. I'm going to screw up. I'm going to offend, and it's never going to be my intention. When I see people on the Facebook group sharing contrasting ideas in a respectful way, it's so gratifying because I know this subject touches so many of you in a very personal way. I've been criticized for giving the wrong people a platform, and I've been criticized for my choice of language, and I don't want to invalidate any of your criticisms because they mean people are listening, and they care, and they're expressing themselves. Still, I've spent a number of hours under my covers watching Golden Girls on my iPad when I felt a need to escape and feed my brain comfort food. And when I'm feeling better and when generous listeners offer support or amusement or positivity, I crawl back out and brave the wild west of social media again and feel exceptionally grateful for that generosity. To everyone listening, whether you're mad or grateful or amused or anything, thank you for taking this walk with me on this season. It's a harder walk than I thought it would be. I miss Samantha Hall, and I will be returning to murder in season three, but for the time being, I think this experiment is important. It's hard, but it's worth it, because we're talking about accusations and defenses at a time we need to be paying attention to them. And we're having conversations about consent outside of our echo chambers. I may not be your brand of feminist, but I am a feminist. And I think you who are listening this season, man or woman, you who are willing to open your ears and your minds to these uncomfortable conversations, you're damn good feminists too. And on that note, I am excited to begin today's episode. Following the pickup artist installment, I recorded two separate interviews, one with a male PUA and one with a female PUA. I plan to release them in one episode, but due to the lengths of these interviews, that would create almost a 90-minute jury break, and I'm not doing that. So today we're receiving the male perspective. I'm interviewing Derek Cajun, owner of Love Systems. In a future episode, I will be playing an interview with Arden Lee, author of The New Rules of Attraction and an ardent feminist with powerful views on the Me Too movement. Stay tuned for that. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy this insight into the world of professional attraction. Derek Cajun has been a dating coach for 10 years with Love Systems and took over management of Love Systems in 2016. He's the creator of Beyond Words, The Gentleman's Guide to Online Dating, and Charisma Decoded. He's a writer, coach, and public speaker. Hello, Derek.
Hello.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I reached out to you because I wanted to find someone with an authentic knowledge of pickup artistry, what it is, what it does, and its implications in light of the Me Too movement. PUA was the recent topic of an episode in which it was argued that our rape defendant, Keith Montgomery's interest in pickup artistry, illustrated a propensity to commit rape, which was then deliberated amongst the jurors about whether or not that was a fair assertion or argument by the prosecution. So am I right that you've listened to that episode?
I have, yes.
Okay, great. What, if I may ask, were your impressions upon listening?
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I've been in this industry, I guess you could call it, for over 10 years, since 2005. And obviously, it's gone through a lot of different changes in that time. You know, it was mentioned in your episode that the popularity of the book The Game by Neil Strauss kind of rocketed this into the mainstream. Since then, obviously, though, there's been a lot of changes. And just like anything, there's a spectrum when it comes to this stuff. And on that spectrum, there's going to be people that believe one way, and then on the other end of the spectrum is going to be people that believe another way. And it's tough to sort of, you know, push everything. If you put this sort of PUA stuff under an umbrella, it kind of complicates things, because there's a lot of this stuff that I think is more in line with self-help than it is with what you'd call pickup artistry. And so it becomes a kind of muddled shade of gray. But I think you guys took a fair look at it in the episode and raised some really important questions, I think, that really haven't been addressed, within the, you know, popular culture when it comes to this stuff. So that's what I'm kind of excited to talk about. But overall, I think, it was interesting how it was presented, especially in the form of a, you know, like a court case, especially considering the guy that was, on the defense for it, was interesting how he portrayed it himself with his own words.
Right. Well, thank you. Yeah, I understand what you mean about a spectrum, because I have heard criticizers of pickup artistry describe it as being something akin to just rapiness and advantage taking. And then I've heard proponents of pickup artistry speak to how it's more a tool for typically men to develop more self-confidence and social techniques. So I understand that spectrum exists, but I think by and large, when people research pickup artistry, they see a lot of material that they may deem offensive. What are the common criticisms that you hear about the industry of pickup artistry?
That it's manipulative, that it promotes lying or, you know, promotes pretending to be someone you're not, that it promotes sort of this, manipulation of women as sort of a means to an end. Mm-hmm. All of those things, which I think are extremely valid.
You do?
And because the truth is, there are aspects of this industry that I would say do sort of follow that line of thinking. I know that at least with love systems, we're certainly not. And this kind of goes back with what I said earlier, where there does exist a spectrum in all of this. And it's the same reason why we don't consider ourselves pickup artists, nor have we ever called ourselves pickup artists, because that's not really what the focus of what we do is. It's not really about picking up. Although I think from someone that just looks at us from the outside, they may see it like that, I suppose, if they didn't delve too deep into it.
What do you call yourselves and what are you?
Just dating coaches.
Dating coaches.
Yeah. And I think it may not seem like a big distinction, I don't think, to some people. Like they may, of course, but that's just a word. What does it really mean? But the truth of the matter is, I think when you call yourself a pickup artist, you're kind of communicating that the focus of what you do is on that sort of, you know, carnal pleasure there, that it's about getting, you know, it's about picking up, it's about obtaining women, mm-hmm. which has never really been our focus ever. It's always been about relationships and sort of being a better man. So I think there is a big difference in that, even just those choice of words to describe yourself.
Yeah, those choice of words are very important. For example, when you just said dating coach, the image that brings to my mind is of the movie Hitch, which is this charming portrayal of, you know, Will Smith teaching someone kind of socially awkward to get the woman that he loves and cares about, and this sort of like giving him the social tools he needs to find romance. But I think pickup artistry and a lot of the teachings associated with that are focused on carnal pleasure, and it's about it's about getting sex, you know. And I mean, I've even seen schools of teaching within the field of pickup artistry about how to seduce exotic dancers specifically. So there is that like sexual seduction aspect of the industry as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, even us love systems, we don't shy away from sex. The issue is that how you go about teaching someone. And here's sort of the big conflict with this, is that men in general, and I'm speaking sort of as someone who's been teaching men for, you know, 12 years now, by default, if you teach a man how to get more, let's say, sex in his life, he's going to trust, if he comes to you, obviously he trusts what you're teaching him. He's going to use that without really any concern of how it may affect a woman. depending obviously on what exactly it is that he's doing. But for the most part, if it's like, hey, say this line, which of course a lot of pickup artists would advocate, you know, we have the lines you can use that are going to get you what you want. Mm-hmm. Most guys aren't going to stop and consider what the moral implication of that is, because they're just going to get what it is that they want. So there becomes almost a responsibility when you teach this stuff to teach men not only what it is that's going to attract a woman, but how best to do that without losing aspects of your humanity in the process. And that's where it becomes, I've always said this since we started teaching, it's not about teaching men how to pick up women. It's about teaching men how to deal with fear, because that's really what we teach. And that's sort of the path that we took. Now, a lot of other companies didn't. And probably the companies that maybe, actually I know, they make a lot more than we do, are the ones that focus more on the sex and more on the quick, easy fixes that I think most men are going to respond to. And I think they've sort of abandoned their responsibility a bit in that, which is why they don't show their faces as often. But my point being, I guess, is that there is a responsibility here that's more than just teaching men, you know, how to achieve these things they want. There is a responsibility to teach them how to do it in a way that doesn't hurt people.
Before you took over Love Systems, did you find it to be more on the end of the spectrum that was predatory than the socially conscious and moral end of the spectrum that you're espousing now?
Yes, a lot. I mean, to be honest, when I first came into the company in 2006, it was a pretty bad place, like not the company, but just the industry in general. And then one of the reasons that I got into it was because I saw what was going on, a bunch of these guys dressing up in weird clothes and spouting lines. I was an actor at the time, so to me, it just looked like acting. These guys are acting, and if anyone can do acting, it's going to be me. But then very quickly, I kind of saw what was going on and sort of felt that there's a better way to do this. And so I used a lot of my acting training as a way to teach guys things like body language, how to spot nonverbals, how to sort of use your subtext and read her subtext to know what she's really saying when she says certain things, to educate guys on what's going on beyond all that. And so the Love Systems did change a lot. Even when I first got on, a lot of the older instructors started leaving. And as we brought new instructors on and trained them, they took the new sort of more, the better approach to teaching. But even when I took over in 2016, we made a whole bunch of changes. We dropped a bunch of things for the language we use. We stopped teaching certain aspects that were still sort of, being held on from the past. And really trying to clean it up, because, you know, a lot of the stuff that we taught, although was much better from when we started, there were still these aspects of it that were rooted in this old way of thinking, which we didn't think was healthy anymore.
Right. I believe it was out of Love Systems that a previous owner published an article about something along the lines of turning a no into a yes. And it was that initially inspired me to incorporate that kind of thinking into this episode, or the most recent episode. And it was later pulled, and I think it received a tremendous amount of public backlash for, sort of irresponsible teachings. Do you remember that article at all?
I do, yes, very clearly.
Did it put a mar on the company before you took over? And is that one of the reasons why you felt motivated to step in and clean up the situation there?
I mean, I was trying to clean it up before that came out. That came out a little bit after the handover, but I mean, certainly it was a sign of the times. And it told me was that I made the right decision in making the choices that I had in order to clean things up. So, it's tough. There's, I'm sure if someone poured through our forums and looking for posts from back, they'd find lots of damning stuff too about us. And, you know, there's not much we can do about that. It's been sort of, you know, the internet never forgets, as they say. So it's tough to erase it all. But the best we can do is to change the way that we teach guys now, and just make sure that what we're advocating now is what we stand by, which we do. So
right. So you mentioned something a minute ago about teaching men women's nonverbal cues and speaking to body language and reading what it is they're actually wanting or saying. Can you expand upon that?
Yeah, sure. I think that women are better at this than men. And you guys, I think, touched on it in your last episode as well. Women tend to communicate with nonverbals a lot more than men do. And the way they do that is with their intonation, with their, you know, with their tone, with their body language, with their gaze, their look. And I don't think it's necessarily something that's totally you know, that they're maybe even in control of. Sometimes it's just something that just happens. But I think women are better at reading into it than men are. And I think that's the reason why you have, you know, when you see two women that have been friends for a long time, it's almost like they can have one conversation on the surface and then another conversation that's completely different entirely happening sort of underneath all that. And to a man maybe listening in, he might not get any of that. But certainly maybe other women, especially if they're friends, but even if they're not, may pick up on that. So there is a whole other language that happens there. And I think it's a miscommunication in that language that leads to a lot of guys' problems with women. They don't necessarily hear the communication that women are giving off. And because of that, they make poor choices. So, I mean, yeah, there's lots of examples. I can give you one. In fact, I think this is one that you guys talked about a little bit in the last episode, which is how is a guy supposed to know, let's say, when he's annoying a woman, or if he goes and talks to a woman. You know, some women, especially nowadays, they're talking about how, you know, when is it okay for a guy to go and, let's say, start a conversation with a stranger? And some people think, well, maybe never. Some people think, well, a woman should never have to deal with a guy trying to, you know, talk to her when she doesn't want to talk to him. And one of the first things that I teach guys is that, look, it's really, really easy to tell when a woman wants to talk to you or not when you just meet her. And the easiest way to tell is to look at her shoulders and if they're facing you or not. And this may sound silly, but I've seen it enough times. When you're talking to a woman that you just met, if she faces you and turns her shoulders towards you and she keeps them there, it usually means she is up to hear what you have to say. As soon as she doesn't, so if she turns them away, or you get like a 45 degree angle, so maybe not totally turning away and giving the cold shoulder, but not entirely facing you, it usually means she's lost a bit of interest. And if what she's saying is going in line with that, so she's giving you one word answers, she's avoiding eye contact, it's time to leave. You're most likely annoying her. So there's simple things like that that most guys would never notice. And they'd think, oh, she's playing hard to get, you know, or this other language they've heard given in advice columns or told by their friends that just reinforces this idea in their head that what they're doing is okay. And it's tough to read the more subtle signals. And I was just giving a very basic example. Obviously, it goes a lot. There's a lot more than just that. But there's these things, these little subcommunications that women give off sometimes that guys just can't pick up on. And to any woman seeing that situation, she'll see, oh my God, isn't it obvious she does not want to talk to you? She's uncomfortable. And it is sort of a whole different language that a lot of guys just don't speak.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I was flashing back to my own personal experiences and whether or not that rang true for me. And I think that it does. I think that if I were being approached in a social setting and I didn't want to engage, but I also didn't want to be rude or aggressive, that I think turning away and trying to indicate my non-interest through avoiding eye contact or kind of turning away or trying to engage someone else in discussion, say, those are all tactics that I might use to convey that message gently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that if you're a woman, that should be, I know this because I've talked to women and my wife and, you know, it's for them, it's almost confusing that guys don't pick up on this. And it's almost like I've had women tell me, like, in their head, they're thinking, how is he not picking up on this? And to them, it's so obvious, but to a lot of guys, we don't even see it. So it is something that needs to be taught, I think.
Regarding your clientele, what percentage roughly would you say come in with sort of an interest in just getting laid as opposed to people who come in with an interest in forming relationships with women?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it used to be a lot. It used to be that was basically all of them. Nowadays, it's very, very seldom, to be honest. Most of the guys that we get in our programs are guys that are usually 25 to 45 years old. They're looking for a girlfriend or a long-term relationship. And I would say that's probably 90 to 95% of them. It's very seldom we get guys coming to us to just get laid because there's other companies that sort of really focus on that aspect of teaching this stuff that they'd probably find before they found us.
Well, regarding those other companies, the ones who are not Love Systems that you just spoke to, kind of catering to the clientele that just wants to get laid, do you feel like that is a sort of dangerous element of the industry for women?
I think in broad strokes, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So how is the Me Too movement, if at all, shaping the industry?
I think that The Me Too movement is, yeah, it's interesting. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more critical sort of look at the sort of companies I mentioned earlier that catered more towards guys that are looking for that, just that carnal pleasure, the manipulation and that sort of stuff. I'd like to see it so that it eliminates that. I mean, it'd certainly help my business. To be honest, I'm not sure, because I think that it's certainly going to help. I think the Me Too movement is a good thing for our industry, for my industry. And I think it really sort of shows that companies like mine are in the right and doing the right thing and are really trying to get guys that, believe in that cause. So I'm hoping that this casts a light on the companies that aren't doing that and, you know, kind of brings to the surface the bad tactics and the poor, strategies that these guys are teaching men that are ultimately, making them worse with women in the long run, especially when you're looking at guys that want relationships or, more serious relationships with women.
Right. Has the Me Too movement shaped your personal understanding of your career and your choices or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly validated a lot of my more recent feelings about the industry and where things are going and where I'd like to take Love Systems. It certainly made me look back on myself in my 20s when I probably didn't have as strict of a moral compass when it came to these things, and made me think again about maybe the women who I may have, whose feelings I may have hurt or who I didn't necessarily consider. Not that I did anything terribly wrong, but I think that any man, I think that sort of has been paying attention has, found himself in a situation in the past that, although certainly, at least I hope not, mimics some of the stuff that's been coming to light, but maybe makes them think, there's certainly been situations in my life where I've not really thought of the other person on the other end of what I did. And I hope that it's caused them to think of that. So, I mean, that's sort of been at the heart of a lot of the stuff that I've been teaching. I mean, I've been teaching this stuff for 11 or 12 years, but I've been in a serious relationship for about 5 of those, and I'm married now to the same woman. So even ever since then, it became a really hyper focus of me to start doing that. So if anything, I think this new stuff is just sort of, like I said, legitimized that to me and made me feel good about doing that, even though I see over and over that there's obviously a lot more money in the other end of the spectrum, but that's
yeah,
the way it goes.
And maybe that's why that's the majority of content you find if you start to Google these things, is because, there's a lot of rapey material out there pertaining to pickup artistries and industry or the coaches and companies that are involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm also optimistic. I understand the benefits of just kind of social study, and especially if you're talking about identifying nonverbal cues that will alert men to the fact that women are not interested. I think that is definitely a subject that's worth exploring. It makes me think of the whole Aziz Ansari discussion that's been ongoing, and how one of the things she said is that she was sending off nonverbal cues to him that he wasn't interested, and clearly he wasn't picking up on those. And so if that's a common failing upon some sexual partners, then I think, some resources out there should be available to them to understand. I'll also call out again the fact that you said if everything lasts on the internet forever, and that your company has experienced an evolution, because I think if any of our listeners after this episode go and research Love Systems or you, they might find some offensive material. And so I think something to keep in mind is that you've called that out, and that's something that you as a person and you as a company are trying to evolve beyond. Am I stating that correctly?
Yeah, you are. And thank you for mentioning that.
Okay. Yeah. I first saw people start, because, in my research for this interview, I found some things that I found pretty, pretty egregious. And I understand that this is sort of a journey of, against the Me Too movement, against kind of social consciousness growing, that there is going to be a progression within the industry. But I don't want anyone out there to research Love Systems and think that we're not drawing attention to the fact that there have been offensive articles posted, and that there have been, mistakes made, I would say.
Yeah, it's why it's always tough when I do media, because usually they'll bring up something that was said in 2007, and it's kind of like, yeah, I don't have a defense for that other than the fact that we don't, you know, have those feelings about that anymore. So, and yeah, it's tough. I mean, there's any company that sort of existed since then got their roots in this movement, which was, had some, I guess, awkward beginnings, to say the least. So we've evolved from that.
That's
thankfully.
True. That was a weird beginning of that, of the pickup artistry, because I'm thinking of the Mystery Method. I'm thinking of the VH1 show. I'm thinking of the peacocking and the crazy outfits.
Yes.
And that was just a weird, weird moment in time.
I was down for all that. I was entrenched in all that. And I still thought it was really weird when I was all into that. So, yeah, totally.
How old were you when you were all into that?
I'm born in 83, so I would have been just over 20. I would have been 22 years old, 23 years old, so.
So, yeah, 22-year-olds are idiots. I mean, broads, yeah. Sorry, listeners, but I've been there, and I was an idiot, and I think that immaturity is something to consider, too, when we're talking about these, these dangerous ideas and young men's propensity to engage in discussions like this, because... You know, in talking about Keith Montgomery, who's the defendant in this season, he wrote some really offensive things in an article, and they were really unlikable things. At the same time, he was 18 years old when he wrote them, and so the question that the jurors explored was, okay, well, how much should that immaturity factor into the way that we are contemplating his current day decisions?
Yeah, we saw it a lot, and we still see it to this day sometimes. You get guys that are 18 years old, 19 years old, they have these authority figures, these guys they look up to, that to them just basically are exactly what they want. They're heroes. They're these guys, oh man, they're getting so many women. Anything these guys say, these guys are going to take as gospel, and it's going to just affect their beliefs about not only women, but you know, just everything, reality. And I saw it, and I still continue to see it, where we get these guys that come into our workshops, and it's almost like they're brainwashed, and we have to sort of deconstruct that. This is the very first thing we do, because you can usually tell because the language they use, they'll, you know, refer to women as basically like objects, and they'll talk to them almost as if they're not human, and it's something that we've seen so much that it doesn't affect me as much. But when I think about it, especially when you mention this, the effect the Me Too movement has had, it sort of really put that into focus. And I'm glad we've been sort of addressing that these, you know, past however many years. But it's tough how you have to sort of deconstruct that. So I can see why these 18-year-old guys that are put in that situation do end up with these beliefs, because, you know, they're really impressionable. And when you have these guys that they look up to spouting them that stuff, it's, you know, it's hard not to buy into it as a horny 18-year-old.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think that impressionable is a good word. Those are really, really formative years. And so if they're ingesting these dangerous concepts about women and socially inappropriate conduct, then that could shape experiences for women in a really negative way for a long time, unless those, you know, those methods are unlearned.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's good. We actually,
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, please go on.
I was going to say, just as an aside, we actually, I had a student that was 14 years old that took my workshop time. Yeah. His father paid for it. Wanted him to get it just so essentially to make his high school years a bit better. Now, obviously we couldn't take him out to the bars or anything because he's 14, but he attended the seminar. And I kept in touch with him over the years. This was about, I think, 6 years ago. So he's about 20 now. He became like the prom king of his high school. He has thanked me so many times for changing his views and sort of taking that, you know, taking him under my wing and teaching him all this stuff. And it really made his life, you know, a really much more positive experience than he was having previously. He was kind of teased and bullied a lot. So it's, you know, stories like that. And you know, I've had two guys tell me that I stopped them from killing themselves and things like that really change. Yeah, like in tears telling me how they were ready to do it. And so people sometimes when I tell them what I do, they say, oh, how can you do that stuff? That stuff is so tacky, you know, because they just see it with that same label, the pickup artist stuff, which is not what it is at all. So it's those sorts of experiences that have kept me doing this and realizing that it's not, You know, it's not about the thing that people think it is. It's about teaching men ways to deal with their problems and the fears they have. And if you can do that, then, you know, they come out the other side much better men, not only better in the terms of how they treat people, especially women, but better in all aspects, you know, in business, in life, in relationships. So that's sort of the core of what we teach. We kind of saw that years ago, that that was the real path we needed to take. And so we sort of stayed true to that.
Is consent education something that you touch on with your clients?
Yeah, certainly more so lately. I mean, we still did before, but now we have to stress it sort of extra carefully because of, you know, the situations I think that guys can get in now when they don't know are maybe a bit more extreme than they used to be. You know, and so, yeah, we highly stress consent. In fact, I mentioned, or I saw in your guys' last episode, there was, a bit of a discussion about no meaning no, which I wish I could have been there to say something because, just as far as love systems is concerned, we've always said that, you know, no obviously means no. And I agree with that. Anyone that says no means no is absolutely correct. But I think the problem is what people don't really realize that question is really about is not really about if no means no. It's more about if no, at least from a male perspective, if no means not yet, or if no means sort of like never, or, you know, this is not happening. And it's in that area where guys get confused. So, you know, we always tell guys like no, you know, always means no. So if you're doing something and a woman says no, then you stop it immediately. But it doesn't always mean, in certain situations that it's no forever. For instance, you know, whether it's a second date or it's later on, you know, not that you should just go ahead and assume that it's a yes, but certainly, you know, if an opportunity arises and she communicates that she's into whatever it was you were trying previously, but she said no to, then maybe it's not a no anymore. So, but I think that's where it gets confusing to guys is because there's a lot of subtext and micro communications and stuff that goes on there that can really muddy up that whole thing. So it's, yeah, that's something we go into a lot of detail with to make sure guys really, really understand what's going on.
Yeah. Well, I think that you've touched on the crux of the issue because, let's talk about that. When you say no might mean not yet, do you mean if you're alone with a woman and she says no, that she might be saying this isn't the way I want it? I still want this to happen tonight, you know, conceivably,
no.
But okay.
Yeah, no, not really. What I'm saying is, okay, so let's paint a situation in which this might happen.
Okay.
So let's say... Are you single actually right now? This is a weird question, but I promise it's going somewhere.
I have a boyfriend.
You have a boyfriend? Okay. So picture when you were single. Let's say you're on a date with a guy and it's going really, really, really well. And you really like this guy and he's very charming and all, you know, everything he's got that you want. Now it's the end of the date and you don't really want the date to end and he doesn't want the date to end and you guys are having a good time. You live around the corner, so you say, maybe you want him to come to have a drink at your house, but you don't want him to think that that means you're saying that he can come to your house and you guys are going to have sex. So how would you communicate that to him? Maybe this has happened to you, I'm not sure. But this is something I ask women sometimes, if this is a situation you're in, how would you communicate that to him?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I have some pretty strong viewpoints on it, because when I was dating, I wasn't aware of this sort of universally accepted belief that if one person goes back to another person's house, that that's an indication sex is on the table. And
yeah, see, it's,
that led
it's
to
not,
some
yeah.
very uncomfortable situations for me, because I just didn't understand that was the cue, that was this green light, you know? And I don't feel that it should be. So, I mean, now that I'm older and wiser and I can probably conduct myself with more assurance on a date, I would like to think that I would have the forethought and strength of mind in that moment to, if I decided to invite him back to my home, that I would... articulate the fact that that was the extent of the invitation.
Yes. Okay, perfect. And this is usually what happens, at least in my experience.
I'm in my 30s now.
Right. And to be honest, when you mentioned earlier, this is something you've learned, and I think that's true for a lot of women out there. I think that there's something that, and the fact that you said that, I think is good, because you're absolutely right. I think there's a lot of women out there that don't realize in male culture, if you want to call it that, there probably is an expectation that if a guy gets invited back to a girl's house, that sex, not necessarily that it's given. I don't think any guys think like, oh, yeah, sex is definitely happening. But they're certainly thinking, oh, she probably is okay with that, right? And so they're probably going to make a move to make that happen, let's say. Now, what happens because of that, I think because that's happened so much to women, is that you'll find situations that play out like you just described, where a woman may want to spend more time with the guy, but she'll have to explicitly tell him and say, look, I want to have, you know, I want this to keep going. Why don't you come have a drink? But, you know, that's all I'm really saying here. You know, like, this sex isn't going to happen. So just, I just want to have a drink with you. And they may have to explicitly say that. So, but here's the issue. And this has more to do with on the women's side than the men's side. Because if you tell a man that, fair enough, hopefully he'll respect that, and he should. But if you, let's say that you do go back to your house and you spend all night talking to each other, and there's a lot more, communication. You guys get to know yourself a lot better. And then maybe later on that night, you are in a place where you're thinking, well, you know what? I kind of am really attracted to him, and I do want this to go further. So, and this is where this is even a tricky conversation for me to have, because it's there's so many things that are happening here where the communication would need to be really explicit that it's tough to sort of just say it, have this conversation like this. But there are situations in which, you know, okay, well, now sex may happen, and it's going to be, either the woman's going to initiate it because she wants it, or maybe the guy picks up one of her signals that even though she said earlier that's not happening, now she's communicating to him through her body language and through her nonverbals that maybe she is into it. Maybe he makes a move. And I guess the question there is he wrong for making a move when he's getting those signals, or he feels that he's getting those signals, even though she said earlier, no. So, and I guess this is where it kind of becomes a gray area. And that's, I guess, using the extreme example of sex, but sometimes it's just something as simple as a kiss. You know, a guy may want to, if they're having a good date with someone, he may go for a kiss, and the girl kind of backs off and says, no, 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 no. And that may mean no, but maybe later on in the date, she may be okay with it. So there's, yeah. And to be honest, this is something that I really struggle with teaching guys, and we usually spend a lot of time with, because I feel bad teaching guys this in black and white terms, because it never is. And it's something that I try to show them when we're out with them, what these signals kind of look like and how to get better and how to be able to tell these sort of micro communications, these subtle sort of subtextual sort of things that happen. Because, I mean, yeah, it's super important. And they need people to read them. So
I have a few thoughts. The first is that the reason why I answered the way that I did, and that I would articulate the fact that sex wasn't on the table if we go back to my house, is because I've been burned that way before. So that's a problem. And I think that I would way rather see people just omit that from their preconceptions about dating, you know, that location should suggest one thing or another. And I know a lot of people disagree with me on that, but for me, I feel like if one person goes to another person's house, like that's so common among with my friendships. It's something that I wouldn't have put a sexual connotation on and hadn't when I was dating openly. So I think that, I'd like for that preconception to eventually disappear, because I don't think it's really fair. The second thing I want to say is, if I did explicitly state sex isn't on the table, and then we get back and he's starting to feel like, well, maybe now I'm putting out signals that I am more interested. I think that if I had explicitly stated sex wasn't on the table before, that he should check in with me in some kind of verbal way.
Yeah, and we do teach that as well, especially nowadays. To be honest, I mean, previously the way that usually worked is that obviously you don't go from just conversing to sex. Anyone that's had sex knows that. Mm-hmm. So there is usually a lead up, and usually along that lead up is when you find out if you know, she's giving you signals or not. So if things are progressing, and if they're getting progressing to the point where it's getting kind of sexual, then there is sort of a ladder there. But I think that, yeah, there is a certain threshold, I think, at some point where a guy must say, are you cool with this? Is this all right? And get some sort of acknowledgement to make sure that he's not just putting her in a situation where she feels that she has to sort of go along with it.
Great.
And and this is something you're seeing a lot more, especially with the Me Too stuff, is that women are being put in the situation where they feel they have to do it because they're uncomfortable or because, I mean, there's a number of reasons. So avoiding that entirely, I think, is the paramount sort of, thing right now.
Yeah. And I think something that probably is involved in a lot of these scenarios we're discussing and that's really important is alcohol. Because, you know, that suddenly complicates everything a great deal, or any substance, but I'm going to use alcohol because I think it's the most ubiquitous in these circumstances. If I invite a guy back to my house on a date and I say explicitly beforehand, like, sex isn't on the table, but let's go back and have some wine, and then I get drunk, then suddenly things are a lot messier when it comes to consent in my mind, right?
Yes.
So how do you, as a coach, address alcohol when it comes to, you know, forming relationships or engaging in a first sexual encounter?
Yeah, so we have really simple rules about that. One is we don't advise our students to drink at all. We feel like, I mean, if you're going to have one drink or whatever, then fair enough. But certainly we don't like our clients getting drunk. So we'll usually limit them, if we can. I mean, we're not their parents or whatever, but if they're getting too drunk, then we'll usually stop the instruction. And two is that you never progress with a woman who's obviously intoxicated. When we say progress, we mean even continuing, like if you're having a good time with her and you want to get her number so you can talk to her again another time, that's fine. But certainly don't go anywhere with her, unless it's just to make sure that she's safe, you know, or stays with her friends or, you know, gets in the cab with her friends or whatever. But, never put yourself in a situation, where, you know, you may inadvertently take advantage of someone. So those are our rules on that.
I think those are great rules. I think that, shutting down advances at a point when you recognize a woman is intoxicated is really important. And I find that really gratifying that that's a part of your teaching, because I think that's very, very, you know, timely and significant. It's something that everyone should be mindful of. So thank you for elaborating on that. Just out of curiosity, are there any signs or signals that you teach men?
Yeah.
In terms of like whether or not a woman is inebriated, like, do you have to break it down for them to that? Okay.
Yeah.
Granular level.
All of this stuff comes up. yes. What we tell them is that, so there's the signs that they need to look for is if obviously they're slurring words, or if they lost their balance, if they are seen a little bit more flighty, like they're kind of like ADD-ish a little bit. All those things are obviously that they've had too much to drink. Usually, if they're not, because some women don't show any signs, then you just have to try to keep track. If you're on a date, keep track of how much they're drinking. And if it goes over, you know, 3-4 drinks, then you're in a zone where you shouldn't be. That's when the date should start to end. There are signs you can look for, like the ones I mentioned, but most of the time it's just like, if you're aware of how many drinks she's had, if you're not sure, ask her friends if she's there with her friends to make sure she's not drunk. Just do everything you can to make sure that she's sober enough to, that you know what she's telling you is something that she's saying with a coherent mind.
Great. I'm again, very gratified to hear that's part of your teaching, because I think it's really important. So what are your hopes for the future of the industry of pickup artistry or dating coaching, or your preferred term of choice?
Yeah, we've expanded, I guess, in that it's no longer, although the dating relationships and attracting women is still the flag that we fly, a lot of our content, in fact, I'd say 2/3 of our content doesn't really, target that sort of information anymore. So a lot of it has turned to, like I said, mentioned earlier, more self-help oriented. So the three aspects being self, health, and wealth. And the so a lot of it has to do with what we call inner game, so breaking down the fears and the limitations that exist in your mind that stop you from achieving what you want to achieve. Taking care of yourself would be the health aspect. And then wealth, we actually give a lot of business advice and advice that would really benefit men outside of relationships in their sort of relationships that have to do with their professions and their job and their, you know, their fields of interest and starting their own business and things like that. And, you know, every one of our instructors that teaches is successful, and most of them are millionaires. And it's not like they came to us like that. It's through the stuff that they've learned and through, you know, teaching this stuff for years and years that we've sort of developed a system that works really well for teaching guys how to maximize the positivity in their life. And part of that is from relationships. Part of that is from women. But the other parts are from respecting yourself and your body and your relationships outside of just women. So with your friends and your family and your business and so on and so forth. So we'd like to get more into that. Self-help is a much bigger industry, a much more competitive industry. I don't think we'll be competing with Tony Robbins or anything anytime soon, but we've had a lot of clients that have attended both, you know, Tony Robbins type self-help and ours, and have found that ours is a lot more precision focused. So I'd like to get more into that than sort of dredging with the PUA related companies like we have in the past. So
right. And I hope that works out for Love Systems. And I also hope that some of those more predatory style companies that I feel can be pretty offensive and exploitive towards women, I hope that those are going to fall out of favor, and that that will be something that we societally progress beyond.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, totally.
Okay, great. How can people learn more about you, Love Systems, or the industry if they're interested in doing so?
Yeah, so I mean, you can go to our website, which is just lovesystems.com, and you'll find everything there. We have weekend, we call them boot camps, but they're workshops that happen just about every weekend all over the world. So major cities, pretty much everywhere. We have those are 3-day experiences, and we have a bunch of other products and books and services we offer. Be sure to check out lovesystems.com. You can learn pretty much everything there.
Okay, great. This was a really informative talk. Thanks again for making the time, Derek. It was nice talking to you.
Yeah, thank you, Chelsea.
Follow me on Facebook at Deliberations Pod and check out the Facebook group Deliberations Room. In 2 days, in the trial of Keith Montgomery, the subject of statement analysis is finally introduced, asking the question, can cases of he said, she said ever be conclusively determined? Thank you, and we'll see you in 2 days.